Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream us online weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. To add your voice to our discussions, give us a call at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRIMPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Kerri Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, as Mark Zuckerberg prepares to testify before Congress, we'll talk about whether he's truly committed to change. But first, on this 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, we're examining his influence on young activists today. And as our guest joins us, I'd like you to think about this. Are you an activist, maybe 35 years old and under, for a particular cause? Has the example of Dr. King been meaningful to the way you approach your own activism? You can tweet me on that. It's at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. DeRay McKesson is with us. He's a civil rights activist and a former employee of Minneapolis Public Schools, and we find him today in Baltimore, Maryland. DeRay, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Hey, it's good to be here.
So I wonder if we can separate the reverence that we hold for Dr. King as a transformational figure in modern American history and the actual influence, right, that he has on people who do what you do, people who are activists today. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that they are so inextricably tied. You know, it is what was powerful about King was not only his call for moral courage rooted in a belief in God, but also just the deep substance of the things that he was pushing. So you think about the Poor People's Campaign, you think about the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, that these were, it was not just sort of a moral call, it was about changing systems and structures. And there was a group of activists who just understood the policy and the laws and the practices really well and pushed for them. So I think that the reverence that people hold is because he made some huge strides in changing systems and structures that really impacted the way people live every day.
You know, I'm so glad you said that because I went back to read some of the things that he said in the March on Washington. And he said, go back to Mississippi, go back to Alabama, go back to South Carolina, go back to Georgia, go back to Louisiana, go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. It's precisely what you're saying. Go pull the levers of the system, right? Kerri this moral message with you, but go actually make the change within the systems that you're living and working in. How does that apply to how you think about your activism?
Absolutely. You know, I think about 4 years ago when we were in the street for the initial phase of the protests in Ferguson, is that we were looking at police violence and it was sort of an unstudied field in a host of ways. That there were some activists who had done incredible data collection, but there were still so many questions about the scope. And now we know that a third of all the people killed by a stranger in this country are actually killed by a police officer. We know that about 1,000 people get killed every year. And we know that there are policies and practices, police union contracts, use of force policies, state bill of rights for police officers. They just protect them. And those are things that we just didn't understand as well 4 years ago. But now we have the language to talk about not only the outrage and the moral outrage about it, but also like what needs to change at the structural level to make sure that there's some accountability. The people who are entrusted to uphold safety, if you think the police should exist, that they should actually be accountable to the public. And that's just not what's happening right now.
I wonder what role you think government plays in this. And I'm not asking that from a negative side only, as in we have to change the way government works to make it more accountable. But also, I mean, is it incumbent on young activists today who are pretty distrustful of government to also use it as a means for the kind of change that you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things about standing in the street is that you only stand in the street because you think things can change, right? Like if you didn't think things could change and you thought this was sort of fixed and permanent, you just stay home because standing in the street isn't going to matter anyway. But you see so many people come out because they know that, like, this doesn't have to be this way. And at the core, it's this idea that public institutions should be accountable to the public and no institution is exempt. You know, I was there for the precinct shutdown in Minneapolis. And what you saw were like people standing in the street saying that like this isn't OK. And not only is this moment OK, but this should never, ever happen to anybody else. And again, people like come out because they know this doesn't have to be this way. I think that what's different about today than when King was alive is that we just have more tools to share information and to organize in a way that they hadn't ever thought. Like I can talk to a million people at the drop of a tweet in a way that was just impossible for them. And I think that that has really changed the way that we interact with each other right now.
Okay. So you raise an interesting question here, though, that the power of social media on this. Is it too easy to like what DeRay McKesson is saying on Facebook and to retweet what you're saying on Twitter and not have to put, you know, some of your time and in some cases your personal safety on the line? How do you think social media has changed the way activism works today?
Yes, I'll never criticize people for telling the truth. And for some people, the internet was the way they told the truth and the way they learned the truth. And that's really powerful. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that the internet allows it so that you don't have to physically show up to make an impact. There were so many people who taught us things on Twitter or on Facebook. And that was really important that they were able to contribute and they didn't have to show up in person, that they might not have been able to be there in person, but they could be there in a meaningful way. And I think that's really powerful. I think about Missouri. If we didn't have Twitter in 2014, Missouri would have tried to convince you that we didn't exist. The news wasn't covering it in a substantive way, that like we became our own storytellers in a way that really changed the national conversation.
I was also thinking about the example that Dr. King showed of persistence and your own experience demonstrating and protesting in Ferguson here after the Jamar Clark shooting and what is happening today in Sacramento with Stephon Clark and many, many other African-American men who have been killed by police officers. I mean, what Dr. King had to take on, right, and understand was that for as much as there was urgency for change, the persistence, it was the long game, right? It was the power of showing up over and over again. What do you say to people who despair about the fact that we are still confronting the deaths of young African-American men and that the change doesn't seem to be happening very quickly?
The frustration makes sense to me that people are rightly frustrated that it seems like they have done everything. They've marched, protested, called, emailed, and like the outcomes haven't changed in the way they wanted to.
Right.
You know, when King talks about the arc bending towards justice, I'm mindful that the arc only bends because people bend it. I think that what we've seen over the past 4 years is like an unprecedented level of activism that people are like challenging systems and structures, saying that it doesn't have to be this way. And importantly, both running for office and then putting forward plans about how it can change. So I'm hopeful. I think about hope as a belief that our tomorrows can be better than our todays. And like, I think that change is coming, but it's not inevitable, that it'll take like persistent hard work.
I was listening to something that Reverend James Lawson was saying in a story on public radio. And he was somebody who knew King quite well. And he was looking at what activism looks like today and whether how Dr. King might recognize that. And listen to a little bit about what Reverend Lawson said.
There are a lot of signs that a lot of people want to get back on the track. The women's marches, the dreamers' marches, the work to dismantle the criminal justice system and the prison system. There's a lot of signs.
Does this feel like a renaissance of activism for you, DeRay?
I think so. And I think that really what is different is that our ability to both access information and share it is just so different. So we now can uncover all of the pieces that created mass incarceration, and we can share them quickly with people all across the country. So when we find a law or a practice or a policy that doesn't make sense in Portland, Oregon, we can call the activists in Portland, Oregon and share with them and teach them all about it, and they can organize at the local level and vice versa. And that is just really different, that the way we've been able to network and just like amplify the work of other people is just like unprecedented. And I even think about the work of the academic community, is that some of the most interesting research that we've seen about the system has come from professors. And like, we can just email back and forth. And it's like, you have really interesting analysis of this law that we've never considered. And like that ability to just share is something that they didn't have the power to do as quickly because of the lack of technology. So I'm hopeful about what what's on the horizon.
That's such a great point. Having powerful, I think, persuasive information at the tips of your fingers. I mean, what an advantage. You're not going to persuade everyone, but that is something that Dr. King had to make the case over and over and over again as evidence built, right? You have the wealth of the history of this evidence.
And we have the benefit of the crowd, right? That,
right.
Like, you know, they did the mass meetings because they had to do the mass meetings. That was really one of the only ways to organize, is that we sort of have a mass meeting every morning online. So you can sort of build consensus actually about an issue very quickly. So when someone gets killed by the police, it's like, we all don't need to be in a room to talk about it being bad. We can talk about it on the internet. People get their marching orders and they know what to do.
Right.
So you think about like how efficient that becomes in some ways and how hard it becomes to manage the crowd when it sort of appears on the internet. But it is a new way for us to organize. I think about in St. Louis, if we hadn't had the internet to be able to just move thousands of people, like there was no, you know, people ask us, like, why didn't we have a big rally? It's like, well, we couldn't stand still, you know, it was illegal to stand still. So if we hadn't, like, had the internet and Twitter to be able to move thousands of people very quickly, like, they would have just stomped us out. And I think that that really is a fundamental shift.
DeRay McKesson is with us if you've just tuned in. He's a civil rights activist and a former Minneapolis public school employee. And he's considering the model, I guess, of activism of Dr. Martin Luther King. Today, we are observing the 50th anniversary of his assassination. And I'm asking DeRay about the example that Dr. King set as an activist and what it means to young activists today. I was thinking about this idea of Dr. King's resilience and courage in situations that where the townspeople didn't want he and the marchers there, the police force was opposed, and yet there was so much determined perseverance. And, you know, I was wondering if you've felt that in some of these places that you've been demonstrating, no one is really with you except for the people who are, you know, physically with you. The townspeople don't want you. I mean, does King show you anything in that? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I think it's different today. Now protest is sort of like cool, right? It's like a status for everybody.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's a protester. And as long as that like is for a specific goal, then that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think about 4 years ago, certainly, you know, we were in the street talking about the police killing people, and you would have thought that we were the people killing people. There were people who were like, this is not the way to do it. You need to sit down. Like, you need to go to a meeting. It's like, we actually tried all of those things, and it didn't turn into any sense of justice or accountability. You know from the precinct shutdown that there were people who were like, this isn't the way to do
it.
That's
right.
This is not the way to bring about change, right? Now it's like you get people on the street and it's sort of like, wow, you know, you get the former president, you get the former attorney general, you get all these people now being like, wow, this is what America looks like. Like pushing back is like the true American spirit. And like, you know, frankly, around issues about race, like that wasn't the case for us. Like that was not how people received us.
Meaning what?
That like these open arms around like protests is sort of an American right and like what it means to be American. That wasn't what people said to us when we were in the street about police killings. It is now what people are saying about
some of
the other issues, but it just wasn't when the issue was focused solely on race. Like the reception was very different.
Well, what does that tell you?
I think that we still have a lot of work to do. And I think that, you know, the way that King called out the white moderate, I think is still true today, that there are people who sort of want to fight until the fight gets hard and something has to be put in the line. And it's also a reminder that the fights that are easy are the fights that don't cost anything. So when you're like, some of the monument stuff, like people are willing to concede on because in the grand scheme, like they didn't have to actually change a system or structure. It was sort of a monument to them. But you ask people to change a law or like devote more funding to school systems and not police departments, and people start to like where they would have just agreed with you before, all of a sudden they're like, well, I can't do it. I don't think we can do this. And the disparities are still really big. So you think about King and the economic justice piece, it's like it's projected by 2053, the median wealth for black people is going to be zero, right? That like the economic, the wealth gap is huge. Police violence is still really big. Housing discrimination, we still have some huge problems to deal with.
Makes you wonder whether Dr. King would have been energized by that or, I don't know, despairing of what you've just described.
If you look at the end of his life and when he started to organize in the North and like started to see the different ways that injustice showed up, you know, he said publicly, he was like, the Voting Rights Act and Civil Rights Acts were sort of easy to concede to because, again, like they didn't cost anything. That like giving people the right to vote, like in was a different cost than like guaranteeing housing for people or like a universal basic income or ending discrimination in workplace. Like it just was different. So he even made this call at the end, and he talked about, like, you know, we call it welfare when black people get it. We call it subsidies when white people get it. Like, he was naming these disparities at the system level. And I think that that, like, framing is still important today.
Yeah. DeRay McKesson, civil rights activist, reflecting with us on the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King's activism and what it means for young activists today. DeRay, thank you.
Thank you.